around on the biotech industry, and I don't think their information is accurate.
Well, we want to thank you very much. Vermont State Senator David Zuckerman of the Progressive Party, also an organic farmer. We will follow this legislation when Governor Peter Shumlin signs it, which he's expected to do very soon against around the labeling of GMO products. That does it for our show tonight. Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez will be speaking at a screening of his film Harvest of Empire, History of Latinos in America. It's taking place in the Capitol at 5:30 in the Visitor's Center. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for details. I'll also be speaking at Dartmouth College on Friday, May 2nd at 5 p.m. There's a change of time at Cook Auditorium, and you can check democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berger, Nick Feltzer, Amato Newman, Shakespeare Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll examine the water district measure on the May ballot.
There's a better world is to come in, don't you see, see, see. There's a better world is to come in, don't you see.
As we approach International Workers' Day in 2014, this May 1st, we find ourselves facing unprecedented cuts to public services, including education, street and park maintenance, social services, unemployment insurance, and much more. As a result, we are seeing a rapid increase in symptoms of poverty, including houselessness and food insecurity. Along with all of this, we continue to experience attacks on people of color, immigrants, working families, women, students, and our right to organize. Our response to this onslaught against humanity is to organize and fight back. Join us this May 1st for a rally in the South Park blocks of downtown Portland at 3 p.m., followed by a march from 4 to 5:30 p.m.
There's a better world a-coming, don't you see, see, see. Better world a-coming, don't you see. When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world a-coming, don't you see.
KBOO and Ear to the Streets of Portland are proud to welcome local artist and poet Taria Autry, the author of her latest book of poetry, Roots, Reality, and Rhyme, May 1st, 2014, starting at 7 o'clock p.m. Taria will be performing excerpts from her book of poetry live on KBOO airwaves and will also be available for a book signing at KBOO Radio. Stay tuned for Freeform Fabulous Thursdays for an intimate night of 60 soul music following Ear to the Streets. That's Thursday, May 1st, 2014, from 7 o'clock p.m. for Ear to the Streets of Portland, followed by a Freeform Fabulous Thursday right here on your community radio, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at www.kboo.fm.
KBOO is looking for a membership director. Duties include database management, conducting mailings, producing reports, assisting members managing pledge drives, and, of course, working closely with other staff members here at the station. The ability to work with numerous people in a fast-paced environment is essential. This is a mix of part-time and full-time work, with 40 hours per week being required leading up to, during, and following each membership drive. A full benefit package is included. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Our organization does not discriminate on the basis of age, race, religion, color, sex, national origin, marital status, sexual orientation, class, creed, physical or mental disability. For a more detailed job description and printable job application, go to kboo.fm. Search for Hiring, H-I-R-I-N-G. And to apply, please send a resume via email to hiring, H-I-R-I-N-G, at kboo.org. The application deadline is 5 p.m. on Wednesday, April 30th, 2014.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. 10 days ago, in my report to the nation on Vietnam, I announced the decision.
I'm Jimmy Tardy. Join myself, S. Brian Wilson, and Mike Hasty as we speak with Joe Lewis, survivor of the Kent State shootings. That's on the anniversary of Nixon's announcement of the expansion of the Vietnam War into Laos and Cambodia. The protests at Kent State followed that announcement, and we'll talk with Joe about that day and what it means. That's Wednesday, April 30th from 11 a.m. until noon.
Unfortunately, while we deeply sympathize with the plight of 7 million Cambodians whose country has been invaded,
taste of water, cool water, water. Old Ann and I, with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water, water, cool, water, clear water, water, water. Open the dam, don't you water. Listen to me, Dan. The devil, not a man, and he spreads the burning sand with water, water. Then can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you? The nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool of water, cool. But with the dawn, I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Ah, yes. Cool, clear water.
Ah, who needs it?
Oh, yeah, who needs it? Well, listen, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is with Abe Proctor and me. I'm Joe Uris, and we want to hear from you. 231-8187. And we want to remind you, we got the 3-minute rule for all calls in. We also have a guest, David Allred, who spent 7 years in the Bureau of Environmental Services. That's the sewer lines to you. And we are going to talk about the pending process of changing the way in which our water system is organized. We're going to talk about the proposal to create an independent water board and a sewer board. We're going to talk about the implications of that. I'm going to be essentially advocating that we reject this proposal. There are real problems, very real problems, with the way in which the city has managed the water system. But most of what people feel, most of what people are experiencing, are costs that are induced by forces over which the city has no power. So we're going to talk about all that. And I think, Abe, you're going to make me look stupid, right?
I'm going to do my best, Joe.
Well, damn. And Dave is going to fill us with facts. And we want to hear from you. But remember, this three-minute rule will apply because we want to get as many calls in as possible. But I'm going to be citing the report, the executive summary of the City Club report on this measure. This is very important. The City Club, very respected, and most of the time pretty smart, looks at this issue of creating an independent water board and an independent sewer and water system and rejects it. They say a closer look shows that Portland relies on an aging water, sewer, and wastewater infrastructure, and that its residents are paying for extensive systems to prevent discharging sewage into the Willamette and Columbia Rivers. Portlanders today face huge costs associated with replacing crumbling underground pipes, building covered reservoirs, which is one of the most dubious aspects of this, I would say, and for drinking water and cleaning up historic pollution in the Willamette River sediments. Now, let's be clear on those. There are huge amounts of toxins that were laid, beginning in World War II and have continued for a long, long time, laid in the Willamette River. And part of the duties, part of the responsibilities of the Bureau of Environmental Services is to clean that mess up. Right now they're proposing a cheap cleanup, that is, they scrape the bottom, they throw the stuff into a holding pond somewhere and pray that it doesn't ever leak. There are better ways to do it, but they're more expensive. At the same time, we had an experience. I wrote an article, a big article in the Argonian about this years ago, about the huge expense that would be associated with separating sewerage, particularly overflow during rain times, separating sewerage and nastiness from the Willamette River, and keeping it into the plants to treat sewerage.
That's essentially been done, right?
Yeah, it's been done, but we're still paying for it. It's the big pipe.
Right, the big pipe.
Big pipe, very expensive. So that kicked our sewer rates up. Other things have kicked our sewer rates up. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Randy Leonard, then on the city council, and others found ways to essentially raid the monies dedicated to the water and sewer systems and do a lot of projects, not so expensive, but very annoying, that had nothing, and I want to repeat that, nothing directly to do with either sewers or water treatment or fresh, clean water.
What were some of those projects?
Well, there was a house.
A house.
A house, an incredibly expensive house, a new center for the bureaus. I can't remember all of them. Can you remember?
Well, there was a Rose Festival.
The Rose Festival building.
Yeah.
But it's got a nice...
That's very important.
Yeah, it's got a neon sign.
Right.
With a rose.
Yeah, it's very important.
But it has nothing to do with water in any sense. So people are outraged. People are outraged because their sewer rates are really high. They're probably the third highest among large cities in the United States. And people think, well, then let's change the system. Let's stop this runaway government. Remember that we are living in a time when all government agencies, in general, are disliked, in general, by most people. And this is an opportunity that has been seen by big water users. Wacker Siltronics, which uses lots and lots of water to make its
industrial food. Water users.
Yeah, industrial water users, including the beer and soft drink companies.
Huh.
And they want to lower the sewer rates. I mean, and the water rates.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
I can understand that. Well, meanwhile, you have to add to this the fact that there is just no end of really outrage and lack of understanding of the historic situation. Another aspect of this is that the federal government, in its infinite wisdom, has demanded that we cover all of our water storage facilities. And that is dubious, but nevertheless, the city has acceded to that demand. And that really, really has aggravated a lot of people. And in the course of that, I mean, here's an example of that. A few weeks ago, some idiot peed in the water supply on the east side.
I thought that was you.
What?
It wasn't you?
Was not me.
Okay, just making sure.
I don't go peeing in the water supply. I have to drink. At any rate, it's just one guy emptying his bladder. On the basis of that, the Bureau decided to remove the entire water supply and refill the reservoir. Now, it would have been a minuscule amount of parts per million of what is generally pretty clean stuff, that is urine, and really unnecessary, but it served the interests of those who want to dramatize the vulnerability of the open water reservoirs. So there's a lot of reasons why people become cynical and angry and dissatisfied with water services and with the Bureau of Environmental Services. Meanwhile, a lot of places are using what I think is a tactically brilliant idea of creating these areas that absorb rainwater, wastewater, and purify it before it comes into the sewer system. And overall, the cost of the big pipe project still is being borne by all of us. And this has meant that a lot of people, particularly people on fixed incomes or people with working class incomes, are facing higher and higher water and sewer rates. So here's an opportunity. When there's an opportunity, politicians and opportunists of various sorts will jump in. And what they've said is, let's trash the entire system. Let's take the water and sewer systems out of the hands of the city council, which is too political, and create a body with a 7 essentially districted candidates who can run and manage the system. And one of the weird requirements of this rule, of this law, would be that nobody who has any knowledge of or involvement with any of these systems will not be allowed to run for these offices.
Yeah, that's kind of odd.
Well, it is kind of odd.
Yeah, any Water Bureau professionals wouldn't be eligible to continue their jobs or apply for these jobs.
No, and another part that's odd is they drew up their map of the 7 districts based on the Portland Public Schools area. Turns out a large part of the city on the east side is excluded. They'll have no voice. So I went to the trouble of looking at the City Club report and other reports, and I feel that there's really, it's like throwing the baby out. This is good. Throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So I invited David here because he has been on the ground.
Draining the reservoir with the pee water.
Something like that. Never mind. And David has actually been working, has spent 7 years working with the Bureau of Environmental Services. That's the sewers to you folks. And I am really, having looked at this, totally convinced that this is a scam. Now, I don't think the people who are sponsoring it are necessarily aware of the scamminess of it. But it is nevertheless a scam, and it will help these big corporate interests more than it will help you or I. It has nothing in it that guarantees that sewer rates or water rates can be reduced. So that's my summation. But Abe, you have a different take on this.
Well, I think I'd like to hear from David first.
Okay.
And I got a few questions.
David, tell us what you know.
Well, I would agree with Joe that this strikes me as throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
We like that phrase because it's water.
And I see we came up with it independently, actually.
It's clever. It's very clever.
Yes. And there's certainly a lot of perhaps cause for improvements to the way the system is governed now. And we've seen some sort of weird decisions on the political side with the uses of the revenue stream, you know, and these two agencies are basically utilities that are have huge revenue streams, $500 million a year each or so, that come in that are really kind of recession proof. So even when times are bad, people still flush the toilet. So you're still using mostly the same amount of water and the same amount of sewage based on the water use. So they're targets for other bureaus that maybe are more subject to recessionary pressures, and when they are short of money, they're looking for other sources of money. And there have been a few examples of monies used perhaps inappropriately for other projects. So there's plenty of room for improvement, and I'm not as versed in the City Club report as Joe is, but at first blush, it looks like some reasonable recommendations are contained in it. So that sort of makes you wonder then what's driving this. And you look at the charges these big users have, and they're really minuscule compared to the overall revenue stream, and probably not that significant to the business practices and bottom line of these big businesses. So it just begs the question: what else is going on? What are the motivations here, and what's driving this? And a few things come to mind. Joe alluded a little bit to the Superfund cleanup, for example, and so it's possible that if this measure passes, the liability for those cleanups would pass, and these big companies would be able to get out from under it. So that strikes me as a sort of a hidden agenda here that's potentially very, very significant.
Well, one thing struck me as making actually fairly good sense, and that is ensuring that water and sewer monies are spent only on water and sewer projects. That would seem to me to be reasonable.
Yeah, I want to be clear about this. I am not here to defend the behavior of the bureaus. I think that in the past, for a variety of political reasons, silly projects, actually not that expensive, but
A drop in the bucket,
literally. Yeah. Water references.
They
but,
work.
But nevertheless, very annoying, especially when you're an ordinary homeowner trying to pay for services. Even though the city and various news sources emphasize the inevitable costs of repairing and maintaining the system. Look, a lot of our water pipes, a lot of our sewer pipes are really antiquated, 1930s products,
right,
not meant to survive into the modern times. Those all have to be replaced or repaired, mostly replaced. That's going to add to the costs. The reality is that the rates are probably going to go up, not down. And that will be true whether or not some separate entity governs the system or the city continues to govern it. That's going to happen. Also, the federal government has imposed what I consider to be really stupid rules about covering reservoirs. And Floyd Jones, who has fought hard and long to maintain the reservoir at Mount Tabor, is one of the major sponsors of this measure to change the way in which the system is operated and who manages it. And she is allied in an alliance that I peculiarly, I guess I'm not fair about this, but I find that the sponsorship of this with Floyd and Kent Crawford is kind of an odd, how can I say this, an odd relationship. He is essentially a lobbyist. He is a supporter of and works hard for the conservative element in the community. I think that's fair to say. He is very effective. They have done a lot of presentations. David and I actually went to the Buckman presentation. The accusation that is primary among their accusations is you can't trust the Audubon Society, which opposes this change, because the Audubon Society has a couple of contracts with the city to count birds and other things. So essentially, this is about rage. This is about anger at the costs, the ordinary costs that everyone faces in dealing with water and sewer. Now, it is also true that there were efforts back in the days of Frank Ivancy to change the way the system worked. We now have water wells in an area that I think are very dubious, along the Columbia River, where there used to be aluminum plants that give us our extra water. But it turned out that that was very useful in times of drought and so on. Nevertheless, that was annoying. Then there was a great plan. I don't say great like I think it's great, but a huge plan, I should say, to embrace a larger area for the district of the Portland water system and to involve using water from the Willamette and other sources to actually destroy the purity of the Bull Run water. So there's a lot of fear and a lot of concern about what the city might do. Right now, the system is exclusively Bull Run water. Right now, the system has the big pipe, which has reduced the amount of outflow of nasty stuff into the Willamette River. And right now, too, we have these little annoying projects that are wastes of money, as far as a lot of people are concerned, that cause enormous outrage, disproportionate probably to what really is the cost of the matter. Again, I believe the costs are driven by the requirement of the big pipe, which is a good idea, by the requirements of covering the reservoirs, which I think is stupid, and by a number of other costs, including the deterioration of a system built in the 1930s.
And so it's David's contention, and tell me if I'm getting this wrong, that this measure essentially capitalizes on those feelings of rage and annoyance and the anger over high rates and essentially channels that into what is a giveaway to some of our largest water users, the industrial sector in this region.
Well, I'm not so sure that they're all that concerned about their actual water bill. Mm-hmm. Their usage bill. It's you look at the list of the top bills, the biggest one is a couple $1 million. But these are huge companies. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that really makes that much difference. And what would be the outcome? Maybe instead of a $2 million bill, they get a $1 million bill, or maybe they get their water for free. What do you think that does to everybody else?
So that's what's in it for them.
Well, that's what they say is in it for them. What I think is in it for them are some other things, such as potentially reducing their liability on Superfund cleanups.
Okay.
I think that's a huge, this is the pink elephant in the room that not too much is being talked about, and I think that needs to be explored. And the other agenda, I think, is, and Joe talked a little bit about this, is sort of a conservative agenda. Well, we don't want to spend public monies. We don't want big government. We don't want sure. cleaning up the environment. We don't want to take care of the watersheds.
Right.
All this kind of
so
stuff.
Knee-jerk reactionary stuff.
Yeah. So right. if we get okay. rid of all that stuff, then in fact, if you did get rid of all that stuff, you potentially could reduce the revenue stream needed to do some of those things, but I think Portland in particular, a lot of Portlanders really value those things. Like, imagine this: we're going to have salmon in the we will restore the salmon runs in Johnson Creek watershed. That's huge. That's incredibly wonderful stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, some of these folks don't like that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, I need to remind people that this measure, which is on your ballot, and will be your ballot will be arriving in your house soon, measure is number 26-156. Okay. I just want to make that clear.
We have on the phone with us now Floyd Jones. Floyd
is
co-founder of Friends of the Reservoirs. This is a group that has fought to keep the open-air reservoirs on Mount Tabor. And Floyd and her group are supporters of this ballot measure.
Yeah.
So let's talk to Floyd. Floyd, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yes, good morning. I wish I had known in advance that you were having the show this morning. Yes, Friends of the Reservoirs have been involved in every major policy decision with the Water Bureau for the last 12 years. We did get started on the reservoir issue, but we've worked on every issue, the plan to build a chemical filtration plant, to relinquish ownership of our...
Yeah, the cryptosporidium incident.
No, the relinquishing of ownership back in 2002, the city was going to relinquish ownership of our system to other governments, so we would lose control of our system. It would be diminished to 1/13. There are a number of issues, and over the years, I've served on the budget committee. I've attended all budget committee meetings for the last 9 years. So I've been involved, you know, intensively on every policy and rate-making issue, and this decision didn't come about lightly. We participated, of course, when Commissioner Salzman brought a proposal to the Charter Commission 2 years ago to bring an amendment to the Charter for minimal reform. Some problems we had with his proposal is that it had no conflict of interest provisions. I know in your early discussion this morning you talked about the conflict of interest provision, and it doesn't exclude anyone. No one is barred. There's simply a timeout. It's the same as with Congress. When you have congressional members leaving Congress, they can't immediately go and lobby, and that's what this requirement is about. If you've tracked at all the role of the global corporations, CH2M Hill, MWH Global, there are very, very strong conflicts of interest there with a Water Bureau manager leaving the Bureau and then immediately securing contracts because of the way the selection committees work for hiring professional, technical, and expert contractors.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was one of the reasons I insisted on those strict conflict of interest provisions. And then if you look at the current city-appointed committees, like the Budget Advisory Committee, whether it's BES or the Water Bureau, there are folks on either committee that have conflicts of interest. On the Water Bureau, there's a woman whose income is reliant on the good on a good relationship with the Water Bureau. She's made a film saying that she's a missionary for the Water Bureau. Another person, his clinic, received $60,000 a year for the last 5 years. Same on BES. There's someone who serves on there who also received a contract. So there are lots of conflicts of interest on the various panels. Same with the Portland Utility Review Board, where currently they can't even recruit enough members to, you know, have a quorum. But there were good reasons for putting those conflict of interest provisions in there. And I thought you had said that experts with qualifications wouldn't work at the Water Bureau. All of the contracts carry over. All of the union contracts carry over. I mean, we anticipate that a board would seek out new administrative leadership for the Water Bureau because you know that David Schaff was a staffer at Randy Leonard's office. He's the administrator. Ty Kovach, who's running the construction and maintenance group, has no qualifications. He was Randy Leonard's chief of staff. There's another staffer that was that came from Salzman's office. So, you know, we would expect that the board would look for new leadership at the Water Bureau, but the management of the Water Bureau would remain the same. All of the experts at the Water Bureau and at BES would remain.
But the board that you're proposing would have a six-year pause for anybody who had any involvement with the Water Bureau or any involvement in the water industry.
Well, for certain people, for others it would be 3 years. Like if you served on the Budget Advisory Committee, it would be, you know, 3 years. For certain persons, yes, there would be a six-year requirement.
Okay, so I'm looking at the summary of the bill measure right now. It says that people who would be disqualified to be board candidates for this new independent water and sewer district include persons holding any elected position, persons formerly working or contracting with the city related to water and sewer, current district contractors, and employees.
Yeah, so there's a timeout. There's a timeout. They're not disqualified.
That is not enumerated in the summary of the measure.
No, it's not. And you probably, I don't know if you've followed this or not, but the woman who, a woman who owns a corporation that received a $5 per square foot subsidy, a ratepayer subsidy for EcoRoof, she filed a ballot title challenge. And on local measures, as opposed to state measures, where there's a whole board of judges who look at that, in this case, was just one judge. So, you know, we weren't particularly happy with the ballot title. One of the things they didn't want the public to know was that there are provisions that prevent privatization of our water. And so that's not in the ballot title either, but it's in the charter amendment.
Okay, well, that's very important to know. So this measure, if passed, would prohibit privatization of our water supply.
Absolutely. It enshrines Bull Run protections, and that reference is to the entry and logging. It prohibits water sewer privatization. It prohibits our system from being regionalized or turned over, the ownership turned over to outside entities. And it prohibits commingling of our water with inferior sources such as the Willamette. I mean, of course, it allows the Columbia South Shore well field, because we've already invested in that,
right,
you know, and it's limited use. But it would prohibit mingling with the Willamette River. And that, again, was one of the plans. And none of these projects, these major projects, ever go away, because the same global corporations have not gone a day without a contract at the Water Bureau. They don't go away, they just get pushed out. I mean, we stopped, you know, 12 years ago, the plans for building a chemical filtration plant, the largest of its kind, the membrane filtration plant at Powell Butte. And they were going to bring in either Columbia or Willamette River water. Well, you know, the same corporations who promoted that are still on retainer at the Water Bureau. So that's why we put in these provisions.
You know, Ploy, I really appreciate, first of all, full disclosure, I have supported many of your struggles, as you probably know.
Yes.
And this is Joe Urs talking, and I absolutely agree that there's a wasteful process, particularly in covering the water storage units. In fact, this whole manipulation, because this kid peed in the water, and then emptying the entire many, many, many millions of gallons of water, was, I felt, a political move.
Well, it was, and I am very familiar, as you know, with the reservoirs, and I secured public records through public records requests the last time around this happened, and just as then, today, you know, this last incident, there was no evidence that any urine actually made it in there. It's a very steep slope to the water. You know, there were only 38 million gallons in this 50 million gallon reservoir. I don't think a drop made it into that.
Well,
water.
Even if it did, look, let's assume the bladder could hold, which it can't,
right,
a gallon of water. The ratio would be so infinitesimal that I don't think you could show with any kind of chemical examination the impact of that urine. I think it was a purely political maneuver. I want to be clear here. I don't like the way the bureaus have operated. I share most of your concerns, and I'm outraged at a lot of stuff that goes on. Where you and I disagree is that this particular plan would in any way do two things. It would improve the way in which the water system and the sewer system are operated, or that it could in any way reduce the cost of water bills. This is where you and I probably disagree. And I think it's really important to consider this, because this is a major change. This will be the first time in Portland history, I believe, where an entirely separate entity breaks off from the city government with elected officials. And by the way, as you know, because you relied on the school district districting process, a lot of Portland is actually excluded.
No, and that's incorrect, too. That's absolutely incorrect. So what the opposition does is they throw out a lot of mud in hoping to kill reform. The way it's going to improve the system is right now the mayor appoints a commissioner to oversee the bureaus. You don't ever hear any of those commissioners when they're running for office. Like right now, Fish refuses to come out and debate this issue, to come out and talk about any of the major problems with our management of our water or sewer utilities. He's not out here, even though he's running for office. So you never hear any of them out there saying, here's what my policy is going to be, here's how I'm going to manage the utilities. So they're assigned to a commissioner in charge. The way it's going to improve management is you're going to have a board that's a part of the city, solely focused on water and sewer. They're not going to be debating, well, should we have an $8 or $12 street tax? And how are we going to spend this PDC money? And are we going to, industrialize Hayden, Hayden Island? They're not going to be distracted by all of those discussions. There aren't going to be any vote trading, because the sole focus of these elected unpaid board members is going to be to oversee policy and rate making for water and sewer. And how is it going to impact rates? Well, right now there aren't any financial audits. Yes, there are audits, but no financial audits. There haven't been in 15 years of either of these bureaus. I mean, most of the significant information that I've learned about Water Bureau management, it doesn't come from the information they hand me. It's from the information I get from public records requests or others get from public records requests. I mean, just as an example, 2 years ago it was revealed outside of the Budget Committee that the Water Bureau was fully funding 51 vacant positions. Fully funding vacant positions, you could consider that fraud. I mean, they're collecting money. What they do is they say, here's how much money we want to collect, and then they raise your rates to get it. And in terms of, management and staff ratio, a study was recently done, and it showed that the Water Bureau and BES have the highest number of employee managers with a low ratio, 33 managers at the Water Bureau supervise three or less. I mean, I could go through a long list. The Sandy River Crossing Project, an infrastructure project, the estimate was $8 million with a 40% contingency. What did that project end up costing? $25 million, it was reported.
Okay. Hold that thought. What we're going to do is take care of a little station business here, and then we're going to give David a chance to weigh in.
Sure. And Floyd, I really appreciate your points. We do disagree on this solution, but I understand, and I want to make clear to our listeners that much of what you're raising are real, not all of it, but much of it. So let's continue this conversation. We got a lot of callers as well, but we have to do radio business. So hang on.
All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio poet Martina Spada speaks on remembering well and raising hell. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a speech by radical economist Richard Wolff, who spoke recently in Berkeley about the failures of the Obama administration to defend the poor and working class from the growing excesses of the top 1%. At 11, Stage and Studio is off today. Instead, Bruce Silverman interviews Bill Carter about his book, Boom, Bust, Boom, an expose of copper mining. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Hope Joseph Gallivan interviews Scott Fife, scenic designer for Portland Center Stage's current production of Othello. It's one of my favorites. And Fred Schoening, the technical director at Portland Center Stage. They talk about the challenges and process of designing and building theater sets. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, and I'm going to go to David now. David Allred, you had some comments.
Well, thinking about the top level of how these bureaus are led and run, and how their leadership is chosen, that's a key thing with the management of a large organization. And it used to be, I believe, that most or all of these city bureaus were run by civil servants, and so they were somewhat insulated from political pressures. That's no longer the case, and I think the only one left is the Bureau of Environmental Services, still led by a civil servant type administrator. So when you have appointees that are from the political side, you maybe don't get the same kind of leadership that you do from technocratic experts that you could have. And when you look at their management, the bureau I'm most familiar with, BES obviously, is actually, I think, very well run. And a good example of that would be the Big Pipe project. $1.4 billion spent over 20 years, on time, on budget, and we have a system now that complies with the regulations and avoids dumping raw sewage in the river, except in the very greatest storms, a couple times a year. So that's a very significant achievement, but it, of course, it's very expensive. We got out in front of other cities on this. We've completed our project now, where it's true we have high rates, but
that is we're falling down the list because some of these other cities now that are facing the same thing, and it's going to be even more expensive for them. So mm-hmm. I think on balance, we're in pretty good shape.
But I want to weigh in for a minute. I understand the anger and the outrage. As an ordinary homeowner, anyone facing increased or an ordinary renter facing the increased costs of these services becomes outraged. Certain policies are, how shall I put this? Well, there's an insider element to this, and that outrages people. The question that really is important for me is this very radical solution, that is creating a separate board, in any way going to improve the rates or the services? And I really feel that I don't see that happening. I am very suspicious of this proposal. And Floyd, I don't know if you, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
I don't know if there's any reason in my mind that we can't force reform within the city government.
Well, we've tried that for many, many years. I mean, City Club, what is their proposal? It's another appointed board. We've got, you know, five or six appointed boards, and they say this will restrict spending. There's nothing that restricts spending. In the measure, there is. You know, right now, City Council has been violating the city charter, but there'll be further restrictions. It will restrict it to water, sewer, and stormwater services directly linked. But City Hall has already said, we don't even like the restrictions that are there now. They're going to appeal the lawsuit. They want to be able to dip their hands in. So that's one way. The financial audits is going to, you know, provide another way to reduce rates. Mm-hmm. I mean, and on any of these, Mate, you said the big pipe came in on time and on budget. That's really not true. I'm not an expert on BES budgeting, but I do know that the
budget... Well, why do you say that's not true? I mean, I looked at the figures.
Well, that was lower, and then, of course, just because you keep adding to a budget and make it on time. That's what they said about the Sandy River crossing too, but it wasn't. When that project was, you know, underway by the design by C.H. Chumhill, it was, you know, at $8 million with a 40% contingency, and then
different
it escalated. So they came into the budget meeting and said on time and on budget, and I challenged it, and they had to write a, you know, five-page paper explaining, you know, why it escalated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and even in terms of the BES budget, it's a huge budget. And, yes, debt is a big factor, but the rest of the money is going somewhere. I mean, in 2010, the auditor did a report saying that BES could save over $1 million every year if they took certain actions, and they ignored it.
Okay, Floyd, what I want to do is I want to invite some of our regular listeners to be involved in this conversation. And I want to remind them, unlike you, that they really have a limit of 3 minutes each. And Dave, did you want to say something right now?
Okay, well, Floyd, we can keep you on the line, so don't go anywhere.
All right.
Okay. Well, I believe the big pipe budget did come in on time. In fact, I know it came in on time. And there was a very strict deadline to comply with the stipulated court order to stop dumping crap in the river. And we met that, and we the contracting system and the way it was built avoided the if you're familiar with what's going on in Seattle right now with their big pipe thing that's actually a transportation project, all kinds of embroilment and union problems and over budget and all kinds of stuff going on. We avoided all that. I think we had a very, very well-run project. So you talk about sure, you can find examples of other projects that didn't work so well, and most of them are small potatoes by comparison. But I think this big project was a shining example of good management.
Okay, what I'm going to do now is ask for our regular callers, 231-8187, to make their commitments. And who do we have? Steve, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Floyd Jones just said that the study showed that BES could save $1 million a year in its budget. Your gentleman from the BES said the budget's $500 million a year, so that's 1/500th of the budget, which I would not consider to be significant. Also, the lawsuit that Flo Jones mentioned, I think, alleges that Green Street spending, which has saved the city tens of millions of dollars, and the restoration of the Johnson Creek and also riparian protection are inappropriate. And I think those are all appropriate and should be done by BES.
Well, the Green Streets reference, I mean, people make all sorts of accusations with very little knowledge. The Green Streets reference is to Water Bureau funds being spent on Green Streets. Obviously, Green Streets, you know, bioswales, all of those things are a function of stormwater management.
Isn't that mentioned in the lawsuit, those being inappropriate?
Pardon me?
Isn't that mentioned in the lawsuit as being inappropriate?
I just explained that. It's mentioned because water funds, as opposed to BES funds, should not be spent on green streets.
Well, I, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter which bureau it comes from. I think it's a great program and saved us tens of millions of dollars. And I think the motivation is that the people behind the lawsuit do not want to support such programs.
Okay. Well, look, we have a lot of callers backed up here, and I'm going to ask for everybody to be patient and reasonable, and please keep to the 3-minute limit. And I want to thank everybody for. I mean, obviously, this is a hot issue. So yeah. we're gonna
people care about the water. Who knew?
They care about the water. Who would expect such a thing? All right. So Floyd, stay online. I'm going to take calls as they came in. Who do we have next?
Rochelle. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hi. Well, bless Floyd Jones's heart. I applaud her activism over the years. I too, Joe, agree with you. I'm very concerned about this measure. There's no one who is more skeptical of the government bureaucratic machine that we have. At the same time, when I look at this idea and I see who's in bed, like Vok or Siltronic, it gives me a lot of pause. When we talk about money going forward, if this passes, detangling from the city will cost untold millions. I mean, just the process of detangling alone will be, I think, ridiculous. Also, I'm very concerned about an independent board. When I think about a board, I think about the Portland School Board. I think they're largely sort of corporate capitalistic-centric, sort of elitist. I think they've been sort of hijacked and co-opted. I don't really necessarily trust the board more than I trust the city to run it. So that's also a concern for me. And lastly, I just think that if we want to reform this, we have better ways. I am not happy about David Schaff or Ty Kovach, maybe, but I'm more worried about somebody like Vok or Siltronic, and I just don't think this is the right move for Portland right now.
Okay. I'm going to ask, Floyd, I want you to stick around, but I want to get as many of these calls in as we can. We have a limited amount of time, and so I'm going to ask everybody here to hang on.
Okay.
And we're going to take calls as they come. Who's next?
Nick, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Nick Caleb. I'm calling in. Mm-hmm. Got about half of your program today. Thanks for talking about it. I wrote an initiative along with a few people called the People's Water Trust. Mm-hmm. And the People's Water Trust is something that takes into account a lot of what Floyd is talking about with mismanagement and also lack of adequate reforms on the table and keeps it within the city, adds water rights and also a lot of transparency and accountability provisions.
But this is different than the proposal that's on the ballot now.
Right. It's gathering initiatives right now. We're trying to meet the deadline by July 7th. And so I think that there are ways to reform the system from within. The problem is, one of the problems with this debate right now is that it's becoming extremely sectarian, and we're getting now we're in election mode and it's kind of yes-no time. And I think the city missed a huge opportunity by failing to propose any reforms when they have the opportunity to do so. In the initiative process, the city gets to propose an alternative once an initiative qualifies, and they totally ignored it. And that made me, even though I'm going to vote against the PPWD for technical reasons, it really upset me that the city didn't even bother to propose an alternative. And now that we've gotten into the campaign and everybody's doing the yes-no thing, the no side isn't talking about reforms. They say it vaguely, like, we'd like to see some reforms, but I think we should actually keep talking about that right now and not get into this.
Yeah, I just want to point out the City Club report does suggest certain reforms. I agree with you, however, and I think I want to be clear about this. I think that the City Council has been remiss over the years in many ways in dealing with this very important resource. My objection is that I don't see how this particular approach is going to solve the problems. But let's get some more calls in because we got so many people stacked up. Who's next?
I think I think that's it, actually. So here's what I propose we do. Hey, in downtown. Here's what I propose we do. Okay. It's been really great that Floyd joined us this morning.
Yes.
It's really added a nice dimension to this conversation. Why don't we give Floyd a chance to make a closing statement, as it were, and then mm-hmm. we'll give David the opportunity to do the same.
Okay. Floyd, are you up for that? Are you there?
Floyd? Okay, well, if we can come back to Floyd, we will.
Floyd, if you're disconnected by some accident of fate, please call us again.
Oh, looks like we lost Floyd. Too bad. Okay. Well, Floyd, if you can get back with us, go ahead.
Yeah.
David, why don't you sum up for us?
Well, again...
Well, she's back.
Okay.
Floyd, are you there?
Hang up now.
Oh. Okay, well, we'll come to Floyd when we can. David, go ahead.
I go back to the, we're sure there's some things that ought to be done to improve the operations of the system governance, but let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Whoa! Bad joke. All right.
Well, we learn these things on our mother's knees, so to speak.
And, as it were, you're going to stay with that image, eh?
So... I think it applies. Great cities have great sewer systems and great water systems. And we're one of those cities. So I think we have a lot to be proud for. Doesn't mean we don't have room for improvement.
Okay. And I want to invite Floyd back to make a kind of a closing argument here. Floyd, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, well, I think Caleb made a very good point, and it's a point that we've been making for years. If the city was committed to reform, they've had a million opportunities to do it, and this last year would have been the time to do it. There's no demonstration of that whatsoever. No change in management, no commitment to annual financial audits, no engagement of long-term stakeholders. PUDs are not a new concept. They run successfully around the nation. This measure was modeled after Eugene's Water and Electric Board. Mm-hmm. And, I understand more than anyone just how different our system is, and that's why we want these protection measures in there. City Council has not proposed prohibiting privatization or prohibiting regionalization. This is the opportunity to get this into our city charter, and we will be able to save money by restricting the use of funds, by annual financial audit, by a dedicated board focused solely on water and sewer. The proposal by City Club doesn't restrict anything. There's nothing in their proposal except a hand-picked board, which we have four or five of those operating right now. So I'd ask people to watch our entire March 6th video, a forum, if they want more information, or give us a call.
I appreciate that. I have a question for you, though.
Sure.
When you did your presentation at the Buckman Community Association, where we all were sitting around arguing and listening to each other, I noticed that you were partnered with, is it Kent Crawford?
Yes, Kent Crawford. He's been involved in these issues for as long as I have, for 12 years. He got involved because he didn't want to see the membrane filtration plant built. So he, Regna Merritt, who is the former director, 20-year director of Oregon Wild, we've all worked together for 12 years.
Yeah, I just didn't know who he was. I appreciate that information. If you want to stick around, there may be an opportunity. We're running out of time, but there may be an opportunity for further comment. I think we do have some more callers on the line.
We do. Leah, good morning.
Good morning. I want to address the issue from a point of a low-income person living on Social Security and Section 8. Mm-hmm. My family, particularly my daughter, who's worked the water rates for them, they run into this problem consistently, not being able to pay their sewer bill, having their water turned off. If we don't address the issue of our high rental costs, real estate costs, I can live in my house without electricity, but I cannot live without water. And that's a major issue. So I do support the big pipes. I've looked at this issue, but I think there's other parts of this that need to be addressed so that we can pay our water bill and continue to have clean water and pay for the needed repairs. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. I just want to make one comment here. A lot of what we're seeing is a reaction, and a very legitimate reaction, to an apparently intransigent and insensitive city council. That has to do with both the structure of our city government and with who we elect. And I think we need to be very, very aware of those facts. That's an issue aside from, and larger in a way, than the direct issue of water problems.
True.
So I just want to mention that. We got some more callers. We go to the phones. Who's there?
Who's up, Steve? Who do we have next? Mindy, good morning.
Hi. This is Mindy. I live in Southeast Portland, and I have been to a couple of the meetings. And I support the independent board mainly because I realize the projects under the BES are important. I love the green streets. And it seems like Marriott seems to have some good leadership. My issue is with David Schaff and the Water Bureau, and my sense is from listening to even the people at the Water Bureau don't have confidence in his leadership. And from my understanding, people are pointing out Kent Crayford being a lobbyist is that David Schaff is a lawyer and doesn't seem to listen to the water geologists, for instance, with the guy peeing in the reservoir, the water geologist said, this doesn't need to be emptied, and he went and did it anyway. So my issue is he's a political appointee, and we've had him since, I believe, way back to Eric Sten. He has stayed there like a tick, and I just don't see the leadership there. Even the Water Bureau employees don't seem to care for him, so...
I don't want to attack a guy without giving him an opportunity to respond, but it does seem to me that we have some serious problems in leadership in a variety of the bureaus in the city. It also seems to me that we have a very insider city council, even though we have a variety of people on it. And I think there are vast needs for improvement both in city government and perhaps in the operation of the bureaus. Where I see myself disagreeing with Floyd Jones and others is that I don't see how this particular process, this particular change, is going to either reduce rates or make the water bureaus and the Bureau of Environmental Services more competent. And I want to, one last thing, I want to warn people, because it's inevitable, that our water costs, our sewer costs, will be rising as we have to meet federal standards and as, in fact, we have a lot of pipes, both sewer and water, that are decaying and have got to be replaced. So that's a reality.
Could I speak to the federal requirements?
Sure.
You know,
go ahead. This is Floyd, right?
Yes, it is. The EPA requirement, it didn't require that we bury our reservoirs. It was a treat or cover requirement.
Uh-huh.
And there was only one utility in the whole nation that was actually seated at the table helping to craft that, and that was the Portland Water Bureau. And they brought with them Joe Glicker, who was then with MWH Global, now with C.H. Chum Hill, and those are the corporations that have gotten the contract. There were many alternatives. They could have treated at the outlet, lower costs. They could have put on the hypalon covers, which, again, we don't support any of these things because we don't have the problem that they'd require we treat for, but those are much lower costs. A long list of stakeholders actually supported putting the hypalon covers on while this rule is currently being revised. I went back to D.C. in 2012. David Schaff was there, and he's not able to make a competent presentation because he doesn't have the background, but nonetheless, you know, I connected with a lot of the other utilities like Rochester, New York. They're not spending one thin dime on treating or covering their reservoirs. They got a deferral because they were sincerely interested in supporting their community. So we don't, it isn't all of these rate increases aren't related to federal mandates. I mean, for example, when they...
No, I want to support you in that. That's true.
Yes, and so, you know, there was a time when the Water Bureau sent a proposal down to the Health Authority for a delay, and they pulled out, you know, like $130 million of projects, but that didn't reduce rates. They backfilled with other projects. So, you know, because there's no one paying any attention, we either have a commissioner who proposes bad things or allows the Water Bureau to do things without any oversight. So, you know, what this proposal does is brings direct, concentrated, focused oversight to these utilities, and that's okay. Never going to happen. I want to make one more comment
because
the opposition always talks about polluters on our side. Their backers are Superfund polluter Northwest Natural Gas, Zidell Companies, Greenbrier Properties.
Okay, Floyd, I have to cut you off. We're out of time.
We're going to have to leave it there.
I think we're going to have to leave it there. Again, the measure, which is a very important measure on who will run the Water Bureau and the Sewer Bureau, it's measure 26-156. And I want to thank you all for hanging out with us. And Floyd, I want to thank you for calling in.
Indeed. David, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
More to this issue than meets the eye.
Absolutely. We may have to take this up again.
We might.
Okay, thanks very much.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Do you see it? It's all around us. It's an assault on our rights, our freedoms, our food, our jobs, our children's education, and ultimately an assault on the only life support system we have, Mother Earth.
Earth Day to May Day, a global convergence for climate justice, is taking place around the world and here in Cascadia from April 22nd to May 1st. The 10 days of action will include teach-ins, protests, call-in campaigns, and direct action. KBOO is a sponsor of local events and is committed to bringing you full coverage of the global climate convergence. Find out more at kboo.fm/Earth Day May Day. That's kboo.fm/Earth Day May Day.
Begin organizing in your community for people, planet, and peace over profit. Join us.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 1 minute after nine. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, poet Martine Espada speaks on remembering well and raising hell. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a speech by radical economist Richard Wolff, who spoke recently in Berkeley about the failures of the Obama administration to defend the poor and working class from growing excesses of the top 1%. At 11, Stage and Studio is off today. Instead, Bruce Silverman interviews Bill Carter about his book, Boom, Bust, Boom,